Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, Kitro here. Time for another episode of TSFP Presents Super Seasons. On this week's episode, we discuss the 2006-2007 season, one of the most dramatic finales to a campaign in Spain ever. Enjoy.
Hello patrons, welcome to the third episode in TSFP Presents Super Seasons. There is a super amount of excitement in the Podmobile today because the season we're going to talk about is one which could be described as super.
I mean, all the years that you've been in Spain, Sid, was this one, this is a contender for the best season, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, it could be described as crazy.
Without doubt. Well, I mean, I'm going to read something that I wrote. Now, admittedly, I'm not saying that I am the oracle, but obviously it's quite helpful to go back over the things I wrote because at least I'm then giving you what my opinion was, not passing off someone else's opinion as my own.
Okay.
But at the end of the season...
Of the 2006-2007 season.
Oh yeah, we didn't actually tell them which season it was.
Give me a chance, but no,
we could have just told them and seen if they could guess, although obviously we can't hear them. Anyway, at the end of the season, I've wrote this. So the longest, weirdest and most fabulous topsy-turvy season finally comes to an end. A season which went from really rubbish to really brilliant in a flash. A season that changed hands in just 18 seconds. A season where none of the top six have managed to win two successive games in a total of 54 matches, but then suddenly put together brilliant runs as we reached the home straight. A season which Real Madrid somehow managed to win the league, turning around the result in seven of their final eight matches, and losing just once in the last 16 to take it on the head-to-head rule, a season in which Barcelona threw it away and in which Sevilla just ran out of energy, missing a golden and possibly unique opportunity.
Absolutely.
That's so it in a nutshell.
The Liga of the Remontadas, which is what it's known certainly for Real Madrid fans, because as you said, they came back in, as you said, seven of their last eight games, came from behind to win. It was a fabulous season. It was a season in which Barcelona came into it as Spanish and European champions, and a lot was expected from them. Real Madrid had not won anything for three seasons, which is a very long time.
It was their worst run for over half a century.
Yes, and obviously Sevilla as well. Those are the three main protagonists in this season.
And actually,
as well,
while Sevilla ran this title very close, it wasn't a huge surprise because they'd been close the year before. You know, they hadn't been a million miles off. They weren't really contenders in quite the same way. But we
they finished fifth the season before.
We knew at the start of the season that they were a good team, and we knew that when they had a very good start, when they got top, I think after 7 weeks or something like that, we knew it wasn't a one off, and we knew there was half a chance that they could hang in there.
So the 20 teams in La Liga for this season were Atletico, Barcelona, Betis, Celta, Depor, Espanyol, Getafe, Nastic de Tarragona, who were promoted, Mallorca, Levante, Osasuna, Racing, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, Recre, Sevilla, Valencia, Villarreal and Zaragoza. And as producer Al pointed out, Recre managed by Marcelino.
Yes.
Who still looks boyish now. So, I mean, then he looked like an actual child.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, although he was probably kind of a man-child then, because while he looked like a boyish character, he was dressed in that very preppy way that sort of makes, as he still is, sort of
he
makes, him,
really
look,
changed at
makes
all.
Him look older and younger at the same time, and it's hard to put your finger on which one of the two it is. Also, of course, he had a certain
Santiago Cazorla.
Yes, he did.
Amongst his
with a magnificent haircut as well, Santi, back then. It was long at the back
back
in
those days.
It was
quite mullety.
Ah, that's all right. He can pull off a mullet if anyone can pull off a mullet.
I mean, the mullet here in Spain is still considered very much an acceptable form of...
And that was Cazorla's kind
hairdo.
Of breakthrough season. I remember the joke going round that they described him as their very own Ronaldinho.
Ah.
Because he was every bit as funny, every bit as ugly, and every bit as good at football.
Wow. Okay. Well, Ronaldinho was with Barcelona, who, as we said, were defending Spanish champions, defending European champions. We won't talk about that, Al.
Let's not talk about that. You say they were defending Spanish champions. I mean, they finished 12 points ahead of Real Madrid in the previous season, so they hadn't just won the league the previous year. They had really dominated the league as well.
Yeah. Ronaldinho amongst their ranks, along with Samuel Eto'o, although Eto'o had a terrible injury this season.
And I think that's a big part of why Barcelona was so poor. One of the things that I remember writing about it this season was this idea that while Barcelona could dominate games, I suppose in a way this was sort of foreshadowing what we ended up seeing from the Spanish national team, certainly at the last World Cup, that Barcelona would dominate games, have loads of possession, but wouldn't have that incisiveness, that touch of aggression that Eto'o gave them. And given that they only lost the league on the head-to-head record, you wonder, a season in which Eto'o had played more, perhaps they would have held on there. But there was a sense, I think, that the decline was coming, that things were a little bit wrong. And, for example, they lost to all the big teams. So, I mean, over the course of the season, I think I'm right in saying they only lost seven, maybe eight times. But, like, six of those are against the top five. So when it came to the big games, they just didn't seem to have a response.
And this was Rijkaard's fourth season in charge, I think. So was it a classic case of, you know, a coach has been there for a while and just starts to lose a little bit of whatever it was that was keeping everything together?
Well, and one of the things that it was Tencate, his assistant, who moved on. Although, in truth, you know, this was that season. And yet, of course, he stayed for another one. And so the following season was a season when you really, really felt that this was a club in decline and needed a drastic change. I mean, of course, it was when Guardiola came.
Because, as you've said, you know, things may have been starting to fall apart and there were problems off the pitch, but the league was still decided on head-to-head. It's not like they had a bad season.
Well, and we talked about this a little bit the other day. You know, they won the league on head-to-head in the only league that has head-to-head. Had the league, as all the other European leagues did at the time, had normal goal difference, then Barca would have been champions. I mean, that's how tight this was.
Because they scored considerably more goals than Real Madrid and conceded considerably fewer than Real Madrid.
Real Madrid scored very, very few goals that year.
They were knocked out of the Copa del Rey, though, by Getafe, Barcelona, this season. 4-0.
Yeah, but the amazing thing about this, of course, is it was 4-0, and this is knocked out against Getafe in the game, well, not the game, the second leg of the game, when Messi does that goal.
Yes, that unbelievable goal. Yeah. You know which goal we're talking about if you don't go and look
at it. The Maradona one. The one that's as close to Maradona as you'll ever see.
Anyway, so that was Barcelona. They had brought in Lilian Thuram Zambrotta.
And they were both, I mean, Thuram at that point was 34 years old. Zambrotta was 29, I think. So they were sort of experienced veteran signings. Of course, this is the summer in which Italy had just won the World Cup, so you saw some Italians. Zambrotta, of course, was a world champion. Cannavaro at Real Madrid, will come on to him. He was a world champion as well.
And the key thing, of course, this is off the back of the Calciopoli, so this is the Juventus fire sale. So Barcelona went, right, let's go and have these two. Unfortunately, they didn't choose the best two, and Thuram was decent enough, but Zambrotta was just awful. I mean, apart from the fact he looks like Mr. Punch, he played like Mr. Punch for a lot of that season. He was just so bad.
Who's Mr. Punch?
You know, he's in Punch and Judy.
Okay.
Look at him. Next time you see a picture of him, he looks like Punch out of Punch and Judy.
All right. Real Madrid, then, had three trophyless years, as we said. Absolute wasteland in terms of trophies. Yep. Just really, really awful. Ramon Calderon taking over as the president after Florentino Perez resigned.
Yeah, with hindsight, I don't know if this was the right thing to do, if you should say things like this. But I remember the way that Calderon behaved led to me ending up calling him President Tourette's, because he had this thing that he kind of couldn't control what he was saying. He would sort of spit things out and then go, oh, I mean, there was that very famous moment where he was doing
this. He's still a bit like that now.
Yeah
he's still fairly active on
exactly.
Twitter.
There was a very famous moment where he did this speech in front of 150 students, and it was when he said that Guti was the eternal promise who never makes it, that all our players are spoiled, that David Beckham is medio actor, half an actor on his way to Hollywood. Of course, this was during that in January and February of 2007. Beckham is negotiating with Los Angeles. He's out of the Real Madrid team. He's been ditched by them. Calderon says all these things about the players, which I think actually disguised the fact that he was right in what he said. But then afterwards he said, well, this was a private conversation. It's a disgrace that this came out. Well, this is a private conversation in front of 150 students that you've never met with a microphone. It's quite likely to come out, isn't it?
And he came in as well, promising Kaká, of course, who was at Milan at the time, and not delivering him.
I remember him saying that the day that I die, my headstone will say, here lies the president that didn't bring Kaká. Which may well be true, if only because there probably isn't room on a headstone to say, here lies the president that did this, did that, did the other. He was kind of comically awful. And yet, I suspect at heart, probably not that bad a guy.
He didn't sign Kaká. He did sign Lassana Diarra, though.
Well, I mean, that Madrid midfield, Diarra and Emerson.
Okay, not Lassana Diarra.
Not Lassana, sorry, the other Diarra.
Madrid did go on to sign Lassana Diarra.
Mahamadou Diarra.
This was the better of the Diarra.
I mean, genuinely, Mahamadou Diarra and Emerson, neither of whom were terrible players in their own right, but this sort of sums up Capello.
Right.
That they played with these two defensive midfielders, neither of whom were great, and they were just so dull. I remember writing a column where my opening line was Jesus wept, which obviously you taking advantage of the fact that in Spain Jesus is a name that people do. So I then ran it on from Jesus wept, so did Alvaro and Oscar and Javi and Martin and all the rest of it. Because watching Real Madrid was painfully bad.
I mean, it does seem quite symbolic that, you know, Zidane had just retired, of course, that summer. So they'd lost Zidane from their midfield and they'd brought in Emerson and Diarra.
They weren't good to watch. I mean, they were genuinely awful. I sort of wanted to do this, right? Because I thought, I actually looked back at some of the things that I said about Real Madrid, just to put into context the sort of enormity of them eventually winning the league. And, you know, these are things said at the time, not knowing they're going to go on and win the league. But I wrote, for example, at one point, it's not just that Getafe beat Real Madrid, it wasn't just that Madrid were beaten, it was they were rubbish. Really, really, really rubbish. I mean, you know, for things to be so bad that you write that. But then the other one, I was looking up, and I think this sums it up reasonably well. There's a game, and I can't remember which game it is, I must confess. It says, the newspapers rolled out the adjectives appalling, dreadful, shameful, terrible, as if they'd just swallowed a thesaurus. They'd have been better off swallowing Roger's Profanosaurus from Viz. Real Madrid were shit. I mean, you know, the fact that at that stage I felt emboldened enough to be able to write that. I mean, how bad they were.
I mean, you mentioned Capello. He was back 10 years later, of course. We had Capello in our first episode on 96.
Oh, we 97. Did. Wow. We are Capello's biggest fans, clearly.
Both Capello seasons. I mean, he was brought back presumably because he was seen as being someone who could deliver trophies after three trophyless years.
Yeah, and serious. He was seen as a guarantee.
I mean, he was very serious.
Yeah, very, very serious. You know, he did this thing where every answer in press conferences would be, look, Mida. It's like, yeah, that's the problem, mate. We are looking.
we're looking too much.
This really isn't very good. But yet...
Yes, let's move on and talk about Sevilla as well. Obviously, they had Juan de Ramos at the helm, and they had a bloody good team as well.
Really good team.
If you look at their squad, you know, Dani Alves was there. Old Jesus Navas was there.
I genuinely think Dani Alves was the best player in Spain that season.
Canute.
With Van Nistelrooy.
They bought Christian Poulsen as
well. Well, that was the thing. Poulsen was the only real sort of summer signing. Otherwise, it was just keeping that group of players together, I guess, because like you say, they knew from the season before that they were good enough to
challenge. They were good enough to get quite close, yeah. And obviously, they would play Poulsen with Renato. And I always remember thinking that Renato was this guy that we never really talked about, but was hugely important. His ability to kind of... I know we've used this phrase a million times, the llegada, that ability to get into the area and be decisive, even if he wasn't necessarily controlling the game. Poulsen was much more of a game controller in that sense. They had an incredibly tough centre-back partnership. I mean, Javi Navarro and Pablo Alfaro were a little bit dirty.
Yes, just a tad. I think we've spoken about them before. Yeah. Maybe I think we're 21st century legends.
Yes, we definitely did. We should mention as well that before the season even got underway, there was, of course, the UEFA Super Cup that year, which was between Sevilla and Barcelona in Monaco, in which Sevilla took Barca apart and beat them 3-0, and Dani Alves, I think, was man of the match.
Dani Alves was extraordinary that day. I mean, that was one of those days, of which there were many, where Alves played everywhere. You know, this was the right back who's suddenly up at right midfield, then he's in centre forward position, then he's bursting through the middle of the midfield. I mean, it was just this kind of... I mean, everyone knows this because they then went on to see him at Sevilla, but I feel kind of pleased in a way that we can big him up as a... Sorry, everyone went and saw him in Sevilla. They saw him at Barcelona. I feel pleased that we can big him up as a pre-Barcelona player because he was just extraordinary.
Despite that, Barcelona started relatively strongly. They were top after six games, but they did lose Eto'o to that serious injury, kept him out for about 4 months, and that was sort of tied in to them potentially losing the title, because the title was lost on head-to-head, and it was they lost at the Bernabeu on the 22nd of October. They lost the Clásico, Real Madrid winning by 2-0. Raul and Ruud van Nistelrooy scored.
Yeah, we haven't really... Let's maybe talk about van Nistelrooy, shall we? Because, I mean, he was Real Madrid's probably biggest summer signing, that summer, more than all the others. And Sid, you just said he was a candidate for player of the season.
Well, at the end of the season, my end of season awards, I went for Alves second and Ruud van Nistelrooy first, and I still slightly regret it, because there's no doubt in my opinion, there's no doubt that Alves was the best player in Spain that year. But I kind of like, you know, Madrid have just won this extraordinary title; it's got to be a Madrid player. And van Nistelrooy, there was a real
he was a top scorer.
Yes, exactly. No, absolutely. It's an entirely justified choice.
Yeah.
But that kind of borderline decision between one or the other, I think, was probably
still keeps you
was,
up.
Was a little bit.
Yeah. He took away.
Regrets. I've had a few.
But the thing about van Nistelrooy, I remember, actually, speaking of regrets, there was a slight tinge of regret all the way through that season that, wow, this guy's amazing. Someone should have signed him 3 or 4 years ago. You know, here was a Galactico striker that we'd kind of overlooked, partly because, I suppose, he wasn't very glamorous, even if he was very, very good indeed. Of course, van Nistelrooy had played with Beckham at Manchester United, but they signed Beckham, was it 4 years earlier? This is Beckham's last season, of course. And he was one of these guys who... I remember him scoring a couple of brilliant goals. One volley in particular really sticks in the mind.
Oh, is that the one against Valencia?
Yeah, the long bending cross to him. And he just
I was watching
it.
That on YouTube. Go and look up Van Nistelrooy's goal against
outside of
Valencia.
The boot, bending.
It's a lovely team
corner.
Move beforehand. Yeah, and then, it comes to Van Nistelrooy and he takes it first.
And he did that all the way through the season. Most of the goals weren't spectacular, but it was just the consistency of contribution.
But also,
in a team that
just,
was frankly pretty bad.
They're
not
just poachers' goals. That's the thing. He did score all kinds of goals, which is maybe forgotten a little bit.
And I off the top of my head, I'm not 100% certain about this, but I seem to recall an incredible chip away at Osasuna.
Was that the game in November? He scored
three or four
of Real Madrid's goals away at Osasuna. We've talked on the pod loads about how difficult it is for Madrid to go to Osasuna.
And
to do that and score four.
Yeah, yeah. And he was brilliant.
He's still very well liked. He's still got a good... legacy here in Madrid, partly I think because of this league title.
Well, I mentioned this the other day on Twitter. I think it was one of the Real Madrid accounts, Emeritica Real Madrid, I think, which look at kind of historic things, and they said today is the anniversary of the best league title we've ever won. And obviously, I knew that we were doing this, so my mind was kind of that little bit more trained on it than normal. And I replied and said, well, I don't know about the best, but certainly the most surreal, the most fun, the most enjoyable. And one of the guys who runs one of the kind of very, sort of a long form writing about Real Madrid, but very much a pro Real Madrid website, got back to me and said, well, it is the best because in a way it defined what we are. We knew we didn't play the best football that year, but there's something intangible about Real Madrid's ability to fight against it. And yeah, there was an element of that. And as you say, that then is associated with Van Nistelrooy, because in truth, it probably really was only a season where he was absolutely outstanding, but it was a brilliant season.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams, so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too.
Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And yet, though, they were they did struggle a bit. Certainly the first half of the season, they lost at home to Recreativo.
3-0. Well, that's amazing, getting beaten 3-0. Again, I was watching the highlights of that earlier on, a really, really crazy game.
So at the start of 2007, Sevilla were top on 37 points, Barcelona just behind them on 35, Real Madrid 5 points behind on 32, Atleti on 28. So it was already a sort of three-horse race.
I read some. Somewhere.
Valencia did come out, emerge as a potential candidate sometime in the spring, but it was never really likely.
I don't know if I can believe this is true, but I read somewhere that this was the first season that Sevilla had actually topped the table for years and years and years, like going back something crazy, like 50 years or
Well, they
or
won
something.
The league, Sevilla won the league in...
47, was it?
Something like that, around about then, so it's probably the first time they topped the table since then,
They went into the transfer market in the winter as well, Real Madrid, and signed Marcelo, Gago and Higuain.
Yes. None of whom had an immediate impact, but obviously certainly Marcelo and you would probably argue Higuain up to a point had a long-term impact that was very significant.
They got rid of Ronaldo in that winter transfer window as well, having, I think, only scored one goal.
Yeah, and Ronaldo, there was a famous story about Fabio Capello going into the showers at Real Madrid, in the dressing room at Real Madrid, and seeing Ronaldo there and literally saying to him in front of everyone, "Are you not ashamed of being so fat?" And this was the season of Ronaldo's decline. I mean, quite a part, but even if it is a season of Ronaldo's decline, I mean, it's a hell of a thing to say, isn't it? Mm.
Talking of silly things that Capello said, it was that January as well that, I mean, you mentioned David Beckham, that Capello came out and said Beckham will not play for Real Madrid again.
And then he came back after 2 months and scored a free kick away at Real Sociedad. This was the period at which, in truth, in fairness to Capello, and it's not often that I say that, because he was, you know, largely responsible for a lot of the awful stuff we saw that year. In fairness to Capello, in a way, he was reinforcing a club policy, because what had happened was that Beckham always had in mind to go to Los Angeles, but essentially because of the way things were going and the way that he fell out with Pedro Mijatovic, who was a sporting director, and Ramon Calderon, the president, and to a slightly lesser extent Capello, he essentially brought that forward 2 years. So he went to Los Angeles ahead of time, Beckham. He was always going to, but he went ahead of time. And the way that was managed really, really irritated Beckham's camp and really irritated the club. And essentially what happened was that the club said, right, well, he's not playing again. Had enough of this. He's not playing again. The other key element in this is that Beckham thought, one of the reasons why he was prepared to bring this forward, Beckham thought his England career was over. And it turned out it wasn't. And had his England career still been alive, I am absolutely certain that he would not have gone to Los Angeles yet, which obviously is borne out by the fact he then comes back on loan to Milan and back on loan to Paris Saint-Germain, because he wants to demonstrate that he can still do it in Europe. And that got very, very nasty. And in the end, it happened like that. And there was a moment, for example, when Beckham confronts, I must confess, I can't remember if it was Calderon or Mijatovic, in front of the rest of the squad, and stood up to him and basically said, "You've been lying about me. This is bang out of order. I'm not having this." And the other players were like, "Well, this guy who we didn't know even spoke
Spanish."
I was
going to say, it's quite hard to imagine Beckham even doing that, because he's such a sort of quietly spoken guy.
He's aggressive when he needs to be, I think, Beckham, but I'm surprised as well, particularly in Spanish, and that won him a lot of respect. And I actually think it won some of the respect from Capello. Okay. And Capello essentially decided, you know what, I've got this player here, he can be useful, back in the team.
And when you see some of Beckham's performances in the latter stages of that season, he was brilliant.
Well, those last 3 months were very good.
Well, so back to the title race. As we said, the year had started with Sevilla top, but by February, Barcelona were top of the table. However, all wasn't well behind closed doors at Barcelona, with Eto'o reportedly refusing to play against Racing.
Yeah, and this was the beginning of the glimpses of the breakdown in his relationship with Ronaldinho, which we didn't really see explode properly until the following season, but it was starting.
There was this incredible, I was reading about this sort of impromptu press conference that Eto'o gave. So he'd come back from this injury,
yeah.
He'd refused to play allegedly against Racing. Then he was due to appear at this, it was some sort of public event with the media. They thought, you know, surely he's going to cancel. He turned up anyway, and then in front of the media just unloaded, like, it's worth reading the transcript, unloaded on basically everybody.
Absolutely
everyone else at the club.
It's,
you know, the board, the coach, his teammates.
Have you seen it? I mean, the footage is amazing, because what happens is he does this talk, and then he ducks behind the screen, obviously, as tends to be at these sponsors' events, a screen covered with a sponsor's name on it, which I think was a wine-growing thing, but I can't remember for sure. But it was at a place called Pene there's something or other. And he's going behind the screen, they think, wow, it's over. And he kind of puts his head back around the screen again and say, and by the way, and starts going off again. And there's a moment where, after the event, he's asked about this, and he says something like, well, if you attack me with guns, I attack you with bombs. You know, I'm not having this.
Yeah, it was
yeah, absolutely.
Love it was basically that classic quote from The Untouchables, you know, he pulls a knife, you pull a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. It was that kind of thing.
Absolutely right.
Barca were knocked off the top by Sevilla at the start of March. They won 2-1 at the Sanchez-Pizjuan, a game which included three red cards and Ronaldinho missing a penalty.
Yes.
Yes.
And this, in a way, is, I mean, obviously, we'll come on to this in a minute, the amazing ability that Real Madrid had to get victories from defeats. Barcelona were the opposite. And I remember writing about Barcelona and describing them as a James Bond bad guy. That, you know, instead of just shooting the bloke, you set up an elaborate system of lasers that creep towards his groin. And, of course, in the meantime, James Bond gets up, saves the day, sleeps with the attractive woman, and everyone's happy. And Barcelona were like that. They kept on letting people off.
And that was a crazy few days, because Sevilla beat Barca in that game. And then I think literally 3 or 4 days later was when both Madrid and Barca both got knocked out of the Champions League. Basically, in successive days. And then a couple of days after that was the Clásico.
Was the Clásico. And to put this into context, by the way, so Sevilla, the Sevilla team who beat Barcelona that day, which is in March, that Sevilla team, their annual budget was €30 million. Real Madrid's was 336. Barcelona's was 242. And even Valencia's was 133. So this is the kind of the enormity of what that Sevilla team were doing. Absolutely extraordinary. And as you say, Ronaldinho has a penalty saved by Palop. Very, very good goalkeeper. Very important in that Sevilla team. And they were just brilliant.
That Clásico, which we mentioned, finished 3-3 at the Camp Nou. So this head-to-head, it all rests on that 2-0
victory. And that is one of the best Clásicos that we've ever seen. I think we talked about it in our Clásico show, didn't we, earlier this season.
Yes.
That's the famous Messi hat-trick. We haven't really talked about Messi so far, but Messi at this stage, people knew about Messi because he'd come into the team and he'd been off the bench for the previous sort of year or two. But this was the year that Messi really established himself as being something truly
and
special.
And this game was it, you know. It's a Messi hat-trick, Madrid going to the lead 3 times, Messi pulls it back 3 times. He's 19 years old at this stage. We already knew he was special. I actually looked this up. At that point, he'd played 35 league games and only lost 2 of them. But, of course, he'd had those niggling thigh injuries, which meant, I think even then, we all watched him and thought, if he gets continuity, he is going to be the best thing we've ever seen. And that game was kind of the arrival of it. As you say, they both come into it having been knocked out of Europe. I remember all the talk was of, this is going to be an awful Clásico. This one's, I think, the depressed Clásico, the fear Clásico. There was a front page headline on one of the papers that says, this is the last train. Whoever loses this is out of the title race. Of course, neither of them lost it. And that day, Sevilla lost 1-0 at Nastic. And then suddenly, hang on a minute, there's a title race here. It's worth pointing out here, and it's not someone I normally big up, but that day, Messi was amazing, but so was Guti. Guti had one of those games where you just think, bloody hell, this guy's incredible. But, as I say, Messi came back, free equaliser, and then in the 94th minute, Ronaldinho gets bundled over by Diarra in the Barcelona penalty area, and the referee looks the other way, and that's it. So there's so many moments where you think, ooh, what could have been?
Absolutely. It sounds like quite a game.
Oh, it was amazing. That was one of the most enjoyable games I've ever seen. It was just extraordinary.
Wow. Okay, so Barcelona were top on 50 points, level with Sevilla on 50 points. Valencia third on 47. Real Madrid fourth with 45.
Yeah.
Now we're heading into the run-in. And as we mentioned, there were some really important moments. Real Madrid coming from behind. They were losing away at Sevilla, but they came back and they won 3-2.
That game, by the way, Guti comes off the bench and there's a couple of assists.
And he's extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
It's the back heel one.
It's that back heel
that
one.
Which is
the other back heel.
We've argued about this before, but it's better than the one at Deportivo, in my opinion.
It's better, but I prefer the one at Deportivo.
Okay, I can buy that.
This one is technically better. They also came from behind to win at Huelva against Recre on a match day 35.
And that winning goal was Roberto Carlos in the 91st minute, and that was his last ever goal for Real Madrid.
This was kind of what was happening all the way through, right? I tried to kind of get on top of this to try and work out if I could sort of express how amazing their comeback was. As we've already said, 7 of the last 8 games they were coming back. They went into this at week 21. This was the worst Real Madrid team in 50 years or something. They were just awful, and yet suddenly, bang, here it came, one after the other after the other, and of course the two big ones. The two big ones are week 34 and week 37, which are just bonkers.
I was just laughing then, by the way. Sorry, I feel like listeners have to know this. Sometimes when Sid is looking for a quote, he's scrolling through the photos on his phone. And as he does so, every time he scrolls past about 15 different photos of his dog before he gets to the screen.
That is true. I really should have got rid of the dog ones. Really, but I mean, here's one. So in April, I remember writing a column. Right, which I don't know if I've got this, because I think this just sort of sums up how.
Scroll back past those.
There's Stella. If I can find the way that I open one of these columns, because it was just completely stupid. Where are we? Right. So, and I look these things up. These things are facts, right? To explain how ridiculous. Also, by the way, to point out that I was a smart ass and I could see Real Madrid winning the league. Yeah. I could see this coming. Tonsils bounce higher than rubber balls. New Mexico's greatest tourist attraction is a Nacho. Elbow transplants come from scrotums. And actually, you can see that, can't you, if you look at your elbow. Polar bears can eat 86 penguins in one sitting. But obviously, only if someone takes the wrapper off first, etc. and so on. Bats can dodge raindrops one by one, apparently, which is incredible. And rhesus monkeys hang from trees by their dicks. Chairman Mao cleaned his teeth with tea. Gandhi glugged a glass of urine every morning. Jimmy Traore won the European Cup. And Real Madrid are going to win the league.
When did you write that?
Ridiculous but true. That was in April. Mm-hmm. And what the point I made in that piece was to say, because you cannot keep getting away with it and then not win it. You know, you kind of got this sense that they're going to do this. And they're so bad.
Barca must have just been thinking, what do we have to do? Because there were some games, like you say, where Madrid are coming back to beat Recre. That's when, you know, the same weekend, I think Barca beat Atletico Madrid 6-0 away or something.
That game, by the way, very significant. I mean, a slight tangent, but we'll come back. That's the game that persuades Fernando Torres to leave. At the end of that game, he says, right, that's it. And that's also the game, I remember the build-up to this, brilliant, because this was the game where Atletico Madrid, who of course, defined themselves more than anything else, particularly then, by not being Real Madrid. Mm. And in the build-up to this game, they were saying that all the talk was about, do you let yourself lose? Because you really don't want Madrid to win the league. So you lose to Barcelona, you resolve it, great, you know, that helps them out. With about half an hour to go before the game, the Atletico fans were in early, and this is when they find out about the late, late goal in Huelva. And the Atletico fans cheer, Real Madrid, the Huelva equaliser. They cheer, it's great. Real Madrid aren't going to win, which means we can go and play against Barca properly, beat Barca, and it won't matter. Real Madrid still won't win the league. Obviously, last minute of the game, Real Madrid score. And then they go and lose 6-0 to Barcelona anyway. But it doesn't even help, because Barca still don't win the league.
So, match day 37 really is one of the most dramatic match days in recent memory in La Liga. Barcelona are playing Espanyol, it's the Catalan derby. At the same time, Real Madrid are taking on Zaragoza.
Yeah.
So, in Barcelona, at the Camp Nou, it's at the Camp Nou, isn't it?
Yes.
It's at the Camp Nou.
I was there.
Barcelona are winning 2-1, right? It's all going according to plan. Mm-hmm. And then
89 minutes and 30 seconds.
And then up pops Raúl Tamudo, and check out, obviously, our podcast on the language of Spanish football, because he produces something known as the Tamudazo.
Yeah.
Tamudo, just add Atho onto the end, and scores this goal, equalising for Espanyol, which is great for Espanyol. It's even better for Real Madrid, because at the same time, is it 17 seconds later?
18 seconds. 18 so it was 10:47 and 19 seconds, and 10:47 and 37 seconds.
They
on a Saturday night.
They equalise at Zaragoza. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary. I remember the footage of Ruud van Nistelrooy scoring late at Zaragoza and jogging back to the centre circle and saying to his teammates, "Come on, come on, come on, we've got to get another one." Yeah. And then looking up and seeing the scoreboard flash up the score from the other game and going, I don't believe it. Yeah. We needed two goals. Yeah. The good thing is we didn't need to score them both ourselves. Yeah. Espanyol have just gone and scored one of them for us.
And those two results mean that the two teams are level with one game to go on 73 points each.
The other thing is this is the second time it happens, right? So this is week 37. In week 34, in the 89th minute of both games, the same thing happened. So Real Madrid were drawing 3-3 with Espanyol with a Pandiani header, and Barca are 1-0 up to Betis. Now, they weren't playing simultaneously, but it still happened in the 89th minute of week 34 to both teams. Real Madrid are third, 4 points adrift, and they're basically, it's gone. Then Real Madrid score 4-3 in the last minute. At the same time, Betis, a guy called Sobis, who was a Brazilian who wasn't very good, scores to make it 1-1. So that happened in a 60-second kind of gap. Obviously, a 60-second plus a day, but in terms of the minute of the game. And then it happens again in week 37, which was 18 seconds.
And
bonkers.
That Tamudazo is still talked about, it's still mentioned, it's still an incredibly important and iconic historic moment, certainly in Real Madrid history.
And produces possibly the best front page headline we've ever seen.
Which was?
The Shag of the Century. Written by Espanyol supporting Barcelona baiting Thomas Guas, who was likes to think of himself as funny. I must confess, I don't see it or hear it. I think he's irritating, but that's another issue. But anyway, this headline, the Shag of the Century.
And the coach of that Espanyol team, of course, was Ernesto Valverde.
Yes.
So it was.
Who you will be familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I'd forgotten that, yeah.
So you had a very good season with Espanyol.
Yes, very good.
On the final day of the season, level on points, Barcelona taking on Nastic or Tarragona, Real Madrid. Playing Mallorca, all you have to do is equal Barcelona's result and your champions. Barcelona winning, they won 5-1, no problem. Then beating Nastic or Real Madrid, go a goal down at home to Mallorca.
And they should go more than a goal down as well. There's a great chance for Varela to make it 2-0 just before halftime. And you're thinking, my goodness, they could, having done all season, done the opposite.
Yeah.
They could actually blow this.
And yet, they didn't, once again.
Do you know what happened?
Remontada.
I'm not sure if I should say this, really, seeing as, a lot of our listeners will be English. They took Beckham off. Mm. And that's what won them the league.
Mm.
Because they put a certain José Antonio Reyes on the pitch, who was brilliant in the second half. One of the other curious things
scored
was...
Scored twice.
Yeah. And you know who scored the other goal? Mahamadou Diarra, who didn't want to play because he was due on international duty and Madrid banned him from going. Well, banned him, told him he couldn't go. And he actually came out publicly and said, I want to travel. I don't want to be here. I want to travel. And he comes and scores with a towering header from a corner.
Yes. Not last year.
Not last year. Who would probably never tower a header in his life. Yeah.
And the scenes of celebration at the final whistle are amazing. There's photos of Capello's punch in the air, Beckham's punch in the air. Robinho is squirting a bottle of water all over Capello's head.
There's a moment as well, I think, in the kind of the choreographed celebration where someone's going across the pitch in an enormous transparent ball, like a hamster pushing a wheel around. It's really quite bizarre. Now, I mean, the celebrations are bonkers. The most I've ever seen for a league. Just extraordinary.
It ended then with Real Madrid top on 76 points, the same as Barcelona, of course, but that victory in the first Clásico ultimately doing it for them. Third were Sevilla on 71 points, Valencia were fourth on 66 points, Villarreal fifth on 62.
Villarreal won their last eight games in a row on the way to finishing fifth, which at that time was their second best ever finish. And Diego Forlan, of course, was knocking in the goals for them.
Yeah, and also you look at that Sevilla team, by the way, and I think in a way this is, I mean, I don't, Madrid fans won't thank me for saying this, but this season feels like a tremendous tragedy in a way because it was that lost opportunity for a great Sevilla team. They won the Copa del Rey and the Europa League, well, the UEFA Cup as it was then. And I think if in either one of those tournaments they hadn't stayed into the final, they'd have won the league.
Of course, bear in mind as
they
well...
They ran out of gas, basically.
Bear in mind the
we
order...
spoke about that on Classic Team.
The order in which those things happened. Because when Sevilla won the UEFA Cup, and we can talk about that in a second, they were still just 2 points off the top of the league because the UEFA Cup final was early.
Yes.
Then they drew and lost their last two games in the league, and then they had the Copa del Rey final that they won.
Yeah, it was a real pity because they were a great team, and I think everybody knew that the chances are... Although they kept most of those players, I mean, Dani Alves doesn't leave for another two seasons. The chances are it wasn't going to happen again.
Your team of the season features heavily Sevilla players. You had Palop in goal, Dani Alves. You had Navarro, centre back. Sergio Ramos, centre back as well, and Capdevila, who is not a Sevilla player. Cazorla, Iniesta, Paulsen, Silva, Milito, and Van Nistelrooy. It's a pretty tasty team.
It is a pretty tasty team, isn't it? And Milito, of course, was one of two Militos playing for Zaragoza that year because both Gabi
and his brother Diego were both on the same side.
The top goal scorers were Ruud van Nistelrooy with 25, Diego Milito on 23. Yeah.
He was really, really good that year.
Freddy Canute on 21, Ronaldinho on 21, and sexy Diego Forlan on 19.
And I think it's the following season when Forlan scores 32, is it, for Villarreal?
Relegated were Celta, Real Sociedad and Nastic.
I remember Real Sociedad, a bar in the centre of San Sebastian, that put a sign on the door, said, "We will not open again until Real Sociedad win two games in a row." As far as I know, they didn't. I mean, I might be wrong about this, but as far as I know, they didn't open again that season.
And at that point, Real Sociedad had been in the Primera for 40 years.
Yeah,
so for them to go down was huge. Celta, as you say, went down as well. They had finished sixth the year before, so they went from finishing sixth to getting relegated. Mm.
There we go. That was super seasons.
Oh, by the way, two other teams to shout out that we don't have time to discuss in detail, but it's worth mentioning. Getafe that year, very, very good under Schuster, finished ninth.
Yep.
And Racing that year, finishing 10th, with one of the all-time great big man, little man partnerships up front.
Zigic and Munitis.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, genuinely, you could put two Munitises standing on each other's shoulders, and they would not be as tall as Zigic.
I mean, there was literally a foot
difference. I'm not making this up. It really was. Wow. Also, it might be worth pointing out at this stage.
Yeah,
Capello tried to resign in February of this season and ended up winning the league.
Yeah,
basically stayed because it's like, well, there's no one else. Tough luck, carry on. And the players basically took over.
And it all worked out in the end.
What is they say in Spanish? To happily ever after. Their version of happily ever after is, and they all ate. Partridge, isn't it, they say?
Felices como perdices.
Felices comieron perdices.
Oh, there we go.
Creo.
Yes.
Something like that, anyway.
Two more goals to look up on YouTube. Soldado scoring from basically inside his own half, and Ronaldinho with the scissor kick against Villarreal.
Which is great as well, because he controls it on his chest first.
There we go. Lots to pack in, but it was quite a super season, 2006-2007. We'll be back in a couple of weeks talking about another super season, so make sure you join us then. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.